is Peter Hammond in the studio for From the Frontline, along with Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism researcher, Emma Vaughan Jones. Emma, welcome.
Hi there.
Now, last week we were looking at the nine stages or nine steps to genocide, and this week, as promised, we are wanting to look at the other side of the story, a more positive side of the story on resistance, and we can entitle us Fearless Farmers Who Fight Back. So,
yeah.
Emma, tell us, what is the second side of the story?
Okay, so firstly, the story wasn't being told at all. The story that farmers are being brutally mutilated at a genocidal rate, and yet it seems that few care or dare to say a word. And there has now been an iceberg tip of much needed coverage on this topic, but there is still definitely an under the surface glacier that needs to be uncovered. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions. For example, why is the government not trying to get to the bottom of it? What are they trying to hide? Or maybe even what are they trying to prove? So I feel that we need to find out what's really going on here. There's questions that we need to think about and try and find the answer to. For example, is this really about race? And if so, why are both white and black farmers and workers being attacked? Is it really about land? And do the attackers really want to work their fingers to the bone, morning, noon and night, through blood, sweat and tears? Or, alternatively, is it about money? Then why is 34% of these brutal cases, is not one thing taken? Is it about poverty? Then why is the ANC government getting richer while their people are homeless and starving? Is it actually really to be blamed on the previous government? If so, then why after 24 years of rule is there still such destitution? Or even, why has unemployment grown from under 5 million to 30 million since the ANC came into power? Where's the rainbow nation we were promised? Where's the security, peace and freedom that we were all promised? Is it that the poor and underprivileged are at fault here? Or do we think that it's the ANC government? And if it is the government's attempt at trying to right past wrongs, then why are black people being attacked? Is this really a war of demographics? Or are naive foot soldiers being brainwashed into a war of hatred and personal greed? We need to honestly answer these questions if we want any curative progress to be set in motion in our splintered country. Because these are some of the questions that have been bouncing around in my head that I want to set out to try and find answers to. So we need discernment with regards to media and propaganda. Still more needs to be said, as not everyone has heard or realizes the atrocities that South African farmers face daily, of people being boiled alive and four-year-old girls being cut Joker style through the mouth, power tools used on human limbs, and women being gang raped, and people being cooked alive with blow torches, and entire families bludgeoned to death. Farm workers are even being beaten with iron rods and shot, and the attackers target those who've worked there the longest. So that makes one think. If they are also attacking and killing their own people, what is their true aim? Is this really about land, or is this about selfish greed? Because if they are killing fellow blacks in the hope that they can have the farm for themselves, then at the end of the day, no matter who the rightful owner of the land is, no matter if the white people have left or not, they will continue to murder and plunder for selfish desires, as happened in the Mpukan under Shaka, Dingaan and Mzilikazi, and even more recently in Zimbabwe. So I feel that more truth and press coverage is needed, worldwide and locally. But people need to hear the facts in their entirety, and that's what I want to discuss.
That's a lot of good questions, and that's a key part of good journalism, is asking the questions. And we should always ask why, and we should want to get behind. We need the context, and we shouldn't accept at face value the first bits of information or disinformation, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it with Zimbabwe, because in Zimbabwe, first of all, the Zimbabwe government claimed that the people are without land and we need the land, even though it just pointed out that in Zimbabwe, the white farmers had less than 18% of the land. the Zimbabwe government had far more land than the farmers did. The difference was the commercial farmers, the 5,600 commercial farmers in Rhodesia who happened to be white commercial farmers, they were the biggest employers in the country. They were providing not only jobs but housing for over 2.3 million workers and their families and dependents, and they were providing food for the whole 10 million people in the country and export, the most foreign exchange. In fact, they were the biggest asset economically for the country. And when those farms were, as they called it, reformed, I mean, land reform, it was just nothing but looting. In came the mobs. They looted, burned, destroyed, killed, hacked. Entire herds of dairy cows wiped out and eaten. Huge destruction done to the infrastructure. Burning, looting, and then everyone went back to the towns and the shanties. And it's not that the farm went from having a white owner to having a black owner and continued productivity. Not at all. Suddenly you had 2.3 million people and their dependents without work and homeless. And you had vast increase in the shanty towns in town, and these farms just lying waste, and literally everything from the equipment on through to the tractors rusting or wrecked or ruined. And more than that, people starving to such an extent that more than half of the total population of Zimbabwe had to flee much of it to South Africa, but some of them as far afield as Britain and America, and you'll find Zimbabweans diaspora all over the world. So, and that also led to the greatest economic collapse in history. You never saw such a destruction of a currency as the Zimbabwe currency. Worse even than Hungary, Weimar Republic, Yugoslavia. $100 trillion note couldn't buy a half a loaf of bread, couldn't buy a quarter of a loaf of bread. And that's after they knocked 16 zeros off the Zimbabwe dollar. So they started to have signs out that you're not allowed to put Zimbabwe dollars in toilets because to block the drains and things like this. And in fact, it was literally cheaper than paper. The Zimbabwe dollar was the most worthless thing out there. So what they did in Zimbabwe wasn't just, I mean, they showed us that the real aim was not about land. The real aim wasn't about black and white, because the people who suffered the most were the black poor people in Zimbabwe anyway. Everyone suffered, but people at the top got super rich. People at the ground got nothing. And the farmers lost it all. And so who benefited? Only the top elite of ZANU-PF.
Exactly.
And everybody else suffered. And so basically it was an economic suicide in Zimbabwe. And that's the only actual model we've got of so-called land reform. From the Holodomor in Ukraine in the 1930s under Stalin to Zimbabwe in the last 18 years that we've seen Zimbabwe. And now they're wanting to do it here. So yes, these are seriously important questions. Okay, so you've been researching. What do the facts actually show, Emma?
Well, looking at the farm attack stats, last year in 2017, there were 463 farm attacks with 94 cases of murder. And in 2016, there were 345 attacks, which resulted in 70 murders. And in the year before that, in 2015, there were 318 attacks with 64 cases of murder. So, despite having the elements of surprise, only one in five of the attacks actually seemed successful for the attackers. In the other four cases out of the five, even though the farmers and workers were still horrendously attacked and terribly outnumbered, they were able to fight back and cause the attackers to flee. The farmers are not just sitting ducks.
That's absolutely extraordinary, because this is not a message that's getting out. This is not what's being emphasized. And in many cases, there's almost like a fatalistic, defeatist, helpless, there's nothing you can do about it attitude being given. On the one side, they want to say, there's no problem. On the other hand, they're trying to say, there's no hope. And both extremes are totally false.
Yes.
And you're trying to get the balance here.
For sure. So although it is important to understand and be aware of the absolute atrocities taking place, we do need to also look at the success stories, because there is hope. And if we are aware and well-equipped and we are prepared for the attacks, we can be triumphant, because at the end of the day, evil will not prevail. But we do need to fight against it and not just flee. We must be resilient, because at the end of the day, we are South Africans after all.
Well, yes, we can make a plan. In fact, the term is that a farmer makes a plan around here.
Exactly.
And our farmers really make a plan. Now, as you've been looking, and it's not easy because for many different reasons, a lot of the success stories that I don't want to talk about, that I want to draw extra attention to themselves, but you have dug out some stories of people who are willing to have their stories told. So
yes,
give us some of the examples of farmers who fought back.
So an interesting one is an elderly couple that fought back, and Anna Marie was 78 and Kurt was 80 years old, and they were from Kromdraai, and they were attacked shortly after returning from a shopping trip to Pretoria. Anna Marie had opened the kitchen door and Kurt was busy carrying in the groceries from the vehicle when they were attacked, and they actually identified the person as someone who had driven past their home earlier that morning on their way out. And the attacker hit Anna Marie over the head.
That's a 78-year-old woman.
Can you believe it? Pushed her against the ground and strangled her while demanding her to keep quiet. But she shouted, trying to warn her husband, as the attacker first hit her with a wrench and then hit her with a knobkerrie. And then...
That's a knobkerrie is a hulking great big stick with a big... it's almost like a club.
Yes,
for
exactly.
For a person who's not aware of the term.
Yes. And Kurt was then kicked down on the ground and also hit with a knobkerrie as he entered the house. And as he got hit with the knobkerrie, it eventually snapped on his arm. And in the meantime, Anna Marie had caught the attacker with a shambok, which is like a whip.
A leather whip, yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Before grabbing one of the broken pieces of the knobkerrie and hitting the attacker back with his own weapon.
All this from a 78-year-old.
Yes, can you believe it? The attacker turned around after that and actually bit off the tip of Anna Marie's ring finger in an attempt to try and steal her ring. But she kicked him in the genitals, causing him to collapse. Kurt was then able to take advantage of the situation and threw the attacker out the kitchen door. And while Kurt was trying to hold the door locked, the attacker broke the window and tore off the burglar bars, trying to get back in a second
time.
Was
this man on drugs or something?
So Kurt actually said that he seemed crazy, and you could see that he definitely wanted to get them and was trying to kill them. That's what Kurt said after the attack. And the attacker only actually started to back off when they were able to phone SAPS and the neighbors.
That's the police. Southern Police Service.
Yes, and phone the neighbors for help and for backup, and only then did the attacker actually flee.
Empty-handed,
yes. And, yeah.
So, at this stage, do we know if the police arrested anyone?
As of yet, there's been no arrest has been made. But there was a case opened for burglary only, not for attempted murder or for armed robbery.
So hitting a person multiple times with a club and a wrench.
80
and
years old.
Strangling them and so on. That breaking the club over the...
Mm-hmm.
People, that's not attempted murder.
No, only burglary. Yeah,
unbelievable. In fact, it should have been at least armed robbery.
Yeah, at the very least.
Okay, that's incredible. An elderly couple who could fight back, 78 and 80-year-old respectively.
Mm-hmm.
Other examples?
Yeah, another interesting example was of women fighting back. And this happened in 2011. Ellen went to take care of her horses at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and she was attacked in her feeding room by two men in balaclavas. But she...
Okay, many people may not know what a balaclava is. That's like a ski mask.
Yes.
So it's to obscure your facial features, basically just the eyes and maybe the lips.
Yes.
Exposed. So
exactly.
They couldn't have had good intentions.
No, definitely not. So she managed to resist with her body weight and pulled one of the attacker's balaclavas off his head and bit him on the nose. And then the other attacker pressed a weapon between her eyes and pulled the trigger. But all she heard was a click. And after the shot didn't go off, she was tied up with the horse riding reins and left in the feeding room. But Ellen managed to bite one of the ropes around her wrist slightly loose, and then she was able to loosen her feet. But she said that her biggest fear was her mother that was alone in the house. So then Ellen thought ahead, and she grabbed a piece of iron from the stable and hid it under her arm. And when the two men opened the door, she stabbed the one in the stomach with this piece of iron. But she was then hit in the face with a brick, smashing all her teeth. And after falling to the floor, they just continued to kick her in the back and the stomach and the face. But she was then strangled, and they pulled her hair while asking for weapons and for money. And they tried to tie her up again, but this time with wire. And they then rolled Ellen in a blanket and pushed her home in a wheelbarrow. And in order to breathe, she actually had to bite a hole in the blanket just to get a breath. In the meantime, Auntie Fenner, Ellen's mother, was attacked on the veranda and tied to the guest room's bed with wire. And she pretended to be asleep every time the men passed the room with armfuls of their possessions. And only later, at about 9 o'clock, when it was quiet, could Ellen press the alarm and call for help.
In this case, did they catch anyone?
Yes, actually they did. The attackers were hiding just about 500 metres away from the house in a dam.
Well, one can only hope that the prosecution service saw it through to a conviction, because in many cases it seems that there's not very good cooperation between
a
police arrest and prosecution side.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, incredible. So even women have been able to fight an elderly people.
Yes, yeah. I've actually got another example of 4 generations of women that were in a house together and managed to fight back. The youngest generation just being days old, so 3 of the generations fought back.
Mm.
But Hannah Lee, who was 59, and her daughter Saritha, who's 29, and who just actually had a baby 6 days prior, and then also an 81-year-old grandmother, Riki, they all bravely stood their ground and managed to keep attackers at bay. And there were 3 women and 4 children, including the 6-day-old baby. And they were alone on the farm in Crocodile Drift West when 3 attackers poured through the windows of the house at about 10 o'clock in the evening. Hannah Lee was in the room with one of the children when the window shattered behind her into shards, and she told her mother to take the kids to the bedroom. The 3 robbers opened the door and the security door with an axe and entered the house. They threw the axe at Saritha and her mother, and Saritha told Hannah Lee to then take the children and lock them in the bathroom. And so she did. She ran and locked the children in the bathroom, and Saritha was then able to get a hold of the axe that the attackers had thrown at her and attack the robbers back with it. And they were then, so the attackers were then driven out of the house, but then came back in again. And then 81-year-old Riki sprayed them with pepper spray, and Saritha continued to threaten them with the axe. In the meantime, Hannah Lee had pushed the alarm and the panic button, so the woman managed to keep the attackers at bay until monitoring security arrived at the scene.
Wow. You know, the Bible speaks about not meeting a mother bear robbed of her cubs.
And yes.
It's a very, very foolish thing to threaten a mother when her children are at risk.
She's 100%, going to. Yeah.
Yes. I wouldn't want to see a mother with an axe who felt for her children being threatened.
And in fact, that's not the only time Saritha actually had fought off attackers. A few years prior to that, the attackers had come into her family home and confronted her father in bed, and she chased them away with a knife.
One can only imagine what type of knife. I suppose there's quite a variety in the house. You know, if you know your house, you should have weapons at hand, and of course the best weapon generally is a firearm, but in a kitchen there's everything from saucepans, there's hockey sticks, there's kitchen knives, there's a whole range of things that we can use,
weapons at our disposal.
If we know our home and we've got things well positioned and torches at the right place and things like this, yes, it's extraordinary, because on each of these occasions the people you've mentioned, they were totally surprised.
Yes.
I mean, all the advantage was on the side of the attackers.
For sure. Yeah.
The attackers had the weapons, attackers had the surprise, they knew. And yet, even here where you've got a great-grandmother, a grandmother and a mother, they were able to resist.
Yeah.
Successfully resist.
Yeah.
I mean, traumatic as it was, it should give hope to those people who feel, but what hope is there? There's, you know, all you can do is submit, but of course, if they had, they could have ended up
for sure
more than dead. I mean, exactly. Mutilated and dead. So yes, yeah. Resistance does increase your survival, as the records show. Obviously, the better prepared you are, the better your chance of survival.
For sure. Yes,
but,
yeah.
But there's no reason to just give up and say there's nothing
Not
I can do.
Not at all. Yeah.
There's a couple of verses, and the scriptures give a couple of examples of greater is he who's in us than him who's in the world.
For sure.
Submit to God, resist the devil, he will flee from us. We are more than conquerors through Christ who strengthens us. So there's a lot of encouragement in the Bible to not give up, but to stand and fight. Fight for your families, for your wives, your daughters, and your homes. We read in Nehemiah 4:14. And
yes.
So, yes, the question is, why is there so much disinformation? Because we're not getting these general messages either about the seriousness of the attacks or about the success stories of the many, many farmers, hundreds of farmers, who've succeeded in beating off attackers.
Yes, yeah. Well, as we can see, violence is rampant throughout South Africa, but the majority of South Africa actually wants peace between the black and the white people. But sadly, with the increasing propaganda and malicious news coverage, that majority could quickly dwindle. And the communist Marxist ANC government is using disinformation in the media to fill people with hate and convince them to be racist. Together, the media and the government are the main instigators of most of the South African race-related riots, and we need to recognize that the real enemies are the irresponsible media and the South Africa's corrupt ANC government.
Yes, it would certainly seem that what we've got here is a lot of smokescreen, a lot of distraction, because
For sure.
The real big mega story here is that the country's being looted by a corrupt, inefficient government who not only are not doing their job that we're being taxed for, exorbitantly taxed for,
yes.
And in fact they've just increased VAT. I mean, unbelievable. Think you've got a billionaire president who first thing he does is increase tax on the poor, and this is somehow acceptable. But how do you get away with it? Well, distraction. It's all the fault of the minority, white, Afrikaans, farmers. They're the ones to blame for the colossal failure of government. So the majority are putting the blame on a minority, which gives you the idea of scapegoat. And here you've got the like Mugabe in Zimbabwe. Why did ZANU-PF fail in their miserable 38 years of existence to do anything right for the country of Zimbabwe? Well, it's all the fault of the white farmers. You mean these 5,600 white commercial farmers are to blame why 10 million people in Zimbabwe are poverty-stricken and starving? Well, if you believe them, yes. So what we've got here is race hatred being fostered by these irresponsible political characters and sadly some of the media who are doing it in order to distract people from the total failure, in fact more than the failure of government, the corruption and theft, looting in fact.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. The ANC is busy exploiting their biggest organ, which is the media, especially SABC, to generate racial division, and they use this unwarranted hatred and division to stay in power, and as you say, to divert the attention of the general public away from the real issue of their incompetence and corruption. Effective and honest administration has definitely not been their legacy, but rather corruption and communism. And many of our leading politicians and political parties collude, working together to purposefully misrepresent the actual condition of the country. They exaggerate the threat, in inverted commas, of white people dominating businesses, of white racism and of majority white land ownership. But meanwhile, according to the government's own land audit report, white owners can be linked indisputably to only 22% of South Africa's land, most of which is in the Karoo and Kalahari, both of which are semi-deserts.
Yeah, Northern Cape is actually where the vast majority, virtually half all of white-owned farms in terms of size are Northern Cape, which is about as desolate a territory. I don't think anyone wants to particularly move there.
No. So even further, the Institute of Race Relations did a survey, this is very interesting, which documented that close on 80% of all respondents of the survey and 70% of black South Africans agreed that a better education and more jobs would in time make the present differences between the races steadily disappear. and creating more jobs and improving education and fighting crime were the three top issues which most South Africans wanted the government to focus on, which it evidently is not. And two-thirds of all the respondents, specifically 62% of black respondents, agreed that politicians are exaggerating the problems posed by racism and colonialism in order to excuse their own shortcomings.
That's actually quite encouraging that so many are seeing through this, because it's for a sure. relentless barrage of disinformation. School textbooks, news media, especially SABC and SATV being government-owned, and the propaganda is absolutely incessant. Government messages, the speeches by these politicians, that two-thirds of people don't believe the propaganda is actually quite amazing. I mean, yes. It gives one some sense of hope.
For sure, yeah. So we can see that there is actually an irresistible and undeniable positivity in race relations, but we do need to continue to share the truth and emphasize the importance of discernment when listening to the media, because false reports and propaganda are continuously being spread throughout the country by the state-controlled media of South Africa, making more division than what is actually on the ground. So we do need to be aware of this and keep spreading the truth.
So to what extent do you think this disinformation campaign originates with the media, and to what extent is it from political entities and the media is just being used by politicians?
Well, the media uses propaganda as a tactic to keep the population divided between white and black people of South Africa. They use the mass media, they abuse social media, they write blogs and make comments, and this is called astroturfing, which is laying down of fake grassroots. And marketing actually has a rich history of this. A troll army can actually be hired if you have enough money. And in 2011, the PR firm Bell Pottinger told undercover journalists that they could create and maintain third-party blogs and spruce up Wikipedia profiles and Google search rankings. And so as we can see, there's no doubt that our access to genuine reporting and truth is definitely being stifled.
I saw that there was an investigation before Congress which has Mark Zuckerberg of
Facebook
actually being interrogated by Congress over their censorship, and he admitted he's got 25,000 full-time employees just going through Facebook and blocking, banning, suspending, deleting, basically censorship. And their Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, was cross-examining him saying, do you know of any Democrats, case, parties, anything that's ever been deleted or suspended? He didn't know of any. Did he have any Republican, for example, on staff? And he couldn't point to any. And, you know, it's basically political censorship. But to think that Facebook, which is meant to be a social media platform for free speech, you would think, 25,000 inquisitors and judge, jury and executioners, so to speak, operating there. You know, what about freedom of speech and a free marketplace of ideas? Extraordinary. So there are troll armies, so much so that it's taking up a congressional investigation. Right.
Sure, now. That's unbelievable, hey? And the media definitely loves hate crimes, as it keeps things interesting. It keeps people reading their work. And the problem about a lie is that most of the statement is actually truth, with only a percentage being false. Just like rat poison, actually. 98% of it is food and only 2% is the actual poison. And it's that 2% that does the damage, that ends up killing you if you swallow it.
Yes, well, I think they've got a higher percentage of poison in the media these days than
true.
Than actual truth of food, yes.
So the media seems to elucidate everything that's wrong with South Africa, which could be the truth part of the lie, but then they falsely lay the blame and responsibility on the innocents, and that is the poison part of the lie. So although they report on the disaster and failure that is evident all around us, they then twist the facts and spreading information that deliberately tries to mislead people away from the inadequacy of the ANC government. And although they may truthfully report on some of the problems and issues, they are definitely very selective, trying to ensure that they don't report on anything that could lead to exposing their incompetence. Ironically, though, they can't even always get this right. But the politicians need a scapegoat, as you said earlier, to put all the blame on. And they need someone who can handle it, which ends up being the white people. And this disinformation intentionally deceives and causes division, which is actually the sixth stage of genocide, polarization, that we discussed last week in our 9 stages of genocide interview. So as it is, though, there aren't enough hate crimes against blacks to go around, and therefore lies and are necessary, and leftist liberal journalists are forced to create them.
Hmm.
So the press itself has been manipulated to be a part of the biggest hate, biggest hate crime hoax, by creating this imaginary reality where blacks are constantly being victimized and they are deliberately inspiring them to attack and murder whites. And there is no end to the horrendous killings, and there's no state intervention to stop these murders. Yet the media chooses to concentrate much of their efforts into demonizing white farmers.
Yes, even though we've got the government, as we pointed out last week, already owning over 4,300 odd farms that they took from whites, mm-hmm. Presumably willing buyer, willing seller, mm-hmm. But they haven't done anything with them in 23 years. They've had so much land that they haven't been allocating, and here they're claiming, oh, there's a land crisis. Not that the average black person living in cities wants to go into a farm and get up early and work all day and in the hot sun and hot sweat and blood and tears, mm-hmm. in order to, because farming is hard work. For and the sure. average person in the city would prefer to play with their video games and their iPods. So it's a bit of a scam just because they want to loot it. But in many cases, you've got where the farm has been murdered and the children are overseas and don't want to take back the farm, and sometimes it's fallen to their hands just through this. They obviously want to encourage people to leave. They're not even willing to pay even anymore the low rates of, because who wants to buy farms in South Africa in this situation where it could all be confiscated without compensation any moment? So what this is at the moment is trying to create a sense of absolute desperate helplessness that people will abandon farms or flee, and therefore they can acquire more at less cost. And the goal is just looting and stealing, mm-hmm. and destruction, of course.
And yet, in amongst all of this, they making the white farmer to be the bad man. And even now, during the water crisis in Cape Town, farmers are being accused of being the number one waster of water and cause of the lack of water. Meanwhile, all they're trying to do is feed the nation and keep the economy alive. And
yes, I mean, farms do need some water so that you can provide food for people.
Mm-hmm. So they're keeping the economy going, which is actually what the government should be doing. And the victimized farmers are even being blamed for being attacked, can you believe it? As they didn't have good enough security. Or
like the parliamentarians have, for example. Like you can put that kind of security around a farm.
Yeah, exactly. Or the area was too dark and there weren't enough no trespassing signs.
People didn't know that it's against the law to go and murder somebody.
Exactly. Whatever happened to self-control? A dark alleyway is not an invitation to mug someone. And a woman in skimpy clothing is not an invitation to rape her. And why is it that the victims are the ones in the wrong the whole time? Why can no one take responsibility for their own actions? Society has become so grossly backwards and distorted.
The Bible speaks about calling light darkness, darkness light, sweet for bitter, bitter for sweet. God hates it when people use unjust weights and measures.
Mm-hmm. And these farmers are actually heroes. And even though they are victimized, viciously attacked, falsely accused, left homeless and jobless and even familyless, they've had war raged against them for the last 24 years, yet they have faithfully stayed and continue to provide food to keep the very people alive who are barbarically raging war against them. And the government declares that they are trying to take these farms away from these people, without compensation no less. And this is theft in every aspect of the word. A government is supposed to promote the general welfare of the country. And theft, encouraging murder, promoting slander, this is definitely not welfare, and the world is just turning a blind eye. Donald Trump is actually portrayed in worldwide media as a white supremacist who's going to destroy America and cause hate and division. But has he actually done any of these things that everyone's accusing him of? Has he mobilized a group, encouraging them to kill another group on the basis of race? Has he tried to take away the rights of a specific ethnic group? Or has he tried to confiscate private property? Because if Trump were actually to do any one of these things, let alone all of them, the world would be irate.
Well, more than irate.
Yeah. Exactly. There would be absolute chaos. Yet the ANC government today, and its members throughout the decades, do this and encourage this on a daily basis. Yet they not only get away with it, but are applauded for it.
Yes. Imagine if the much hated, despised, condemned apartheid government of, say, P.W. Botha had ever tried to do anything like, we're going to take farms away from black people without compensation, or, oh, you know, murdering thousands of blacks isn't really a problem and we don't need any task force or the police directed for. I mean, imagine if they'd done any of this, or whipped up the people, you know, kill the black, you know, one cause or one bullet. Imagine if they'd anything like this.
Yeah.
If you'd had President P.W. Botha dancing around saying, bring me my machine gun or something. imagine what. But somehow, the ANC could do it. No news here, keep moving, yeah. Nothing to see.
Unbelievable.
So, okay, what are some of the consequences then of this concerted attack on farmers, the vilification of the victims, the victimization of the villains, the sort of trying to turn reality on its head, this massive smokescreen scapegoating distraction industry? What are some of the consequences?
Well, in 1994, South Africa had about 70,000 commercial farmers feeding approximately 100 million people all over Africa. And then farmers started to get murdered and have their land taken away. And so many started to flee the country as well. And so this more than halved the number of farmers. And about 10 years ago, we were then down to 30,000 farmers. But
that's white commercial farmers.
Yes, right. Yeah. But who amazingly were still managing to feed 40 million people. But now we have less than 26,000 commercial farmers. So they are producing food for less than 40 million now. Yet our population has increased to 58 million, which means we are now having to import food as opposed to before when we're able to export most of our food. So this is absolutely horrifying for the economy and has actually never happened before in South African history.
South Africa's always been self-sufficient agriculturally, so this is catastrophic. Of course, it's an incredible achievement for 26,000 commercial farmers to feed 40 million.
Yes.
But when a population has doubled since 1994, mm-hmm. while the farmers have more than halved,
mm-hmm.
this is, I mean, anyone doing the numbers got to see, this is not good. This is not going in a good direction. And basically what this government's encouraging is famine, starvation, actually.
Mm-hmm. Like what happened in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Half of the Zimbabwe population fled to South Africa.
Voted with their feet.
But where's South Africa supposed to flee to if things were to carry on in the same direction?
Yep, we've only got ocean further south.
Yeah. And another thing is unemployment has gone up by 1 million people for every year that the ANC government has been in power since 1994. And from less than 5 million in 1994 to almost 30 million now, almost 50% of South Africa is currently unemployed. And these farm attacks will result in more unemployment because the farmers will try to mechanize as much as possible, as a majority of the attacks do involve inside men.
Yes, either by intimidation or bribing or straight threats. We've found a huge amount of inside men involved in the attacks. So the farmers are being alienated from the very workers who they are providing employment from by this tactic, which is terrorism. It's pure and simple intimidation terrorism.
Yeah. So land expropriation will lead to a drastic increase in unemployment, and it will lead to an increase in starvation and a major decrease in the economy, as we said that we saw happen in Zimbabwe. And furthermore, burning of buildings and vehicles, looting of shops and striking from work, none of these things are are going to possibly be able to bring down the price and cost of things. Instead, it's going to increase the price of everything. People, perhaps there are a few benefactors, but in the end, someone has to compensate, as nothing in this world is free. And as we were saying earlier, VAT has now gone up to 15%, even though the Bible says taxing more than 10% is oppressive. The price of consumer goods will go up, insurance premiums will go up. Other than the few selfish characters who benefit from such a from such obscenities, the rest of us are left to pay the price.
Right. So, Emma, what can be done? What can the farmers do? What can we do? What are some of the action items that we can respond positively with?
Okay, well, it's important that we all seek the truth and have discernment when listening to the media, especially political speeches and addresses. And it's important to make wise and well-informed decisions. We need to read unconfirmed articles that don't spread mainstream propaganda.
Uncensored news.
Exactly. We need to listen to accurate reports and to inform as many people around us as possible about the truth. We need to have respect and love for one another, regardless of past events, demographics, religion, economic status, gender, whatever it is. Because being different isn't a weakness, it's a strength. And differences aren't damaging. It's only when people lack respect and love for those who are different that it's destructive and causes division. So, to the farm workers, I would say, because many attackers are done by inside men, employees, or people who live in nearby communities, I say that it's mandatory that you and your community are vigilant and truthful. Because we have a duty to expose evil. In Ephesians 5:11, it says, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. So you need to take a stand for truth and for justice, and this will help to uplift your community. You have power to make a difference by correctly informed on political situations and voting for a better future. We cannot afford to fall for the short-term empty lies thrown around by corrupt and short-sighted politicians.
Yes, it's worthwhile noticing that the middle letters of cancer is A and C.
True. Rather, we must recognize their futility and their endless treachery. And if we all stand together against crime, against corruption, and against deceit, we can make a difference.
Indeed. Okay, and what specifically can farmers do?
So, to the farmers, I'd say you need to treat your farm workers with respect and dignity. They can be absolute assets to your farms, and I've heard many farmers exclaim this. So let them know you respect them and you treasure them, but be faultless with how you treat them and how you communicate with them, so that no one can turn around and try to blame you for improper conduct. Mm. This does by no means suggest that we can allow people to walk all over us, but rather, if people are not working as they should, to confront them with respect and loving concern. Because at the end of the day, this is how God commands us in his word to treat one another. 1 Thessalonians 5:12-13 says, now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who work hard among you. Hold them in the highest regard and love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. And we are all made in the image of God and deserve to be treated as such.
Okay, and then practically some security tips. What have you found from people who've been attacked?
Okay, so from people that I've spoken to, stories that I've heard, some tips would be to definitely ensure that all areas around the house are well lit at nighttime. Make sure there are lots of no trespassing signs up, and have security gates throughout the house, especially by the sleeping quarters, as well as adequate burglar proofing.
When one has it drilled into the wood, it's not as secure as when it's drilled into the concrete or the brickwork, for
True,
example.
Yes,
so
good
a
point.
Solid type of burglar bars.
Yes, yeah.
And burglar bars inside with a glass and outside means they've got to break the glass to get to the burglar bars. That gives you more warning.
True.
Whereas if the burglar bars on the outside, they can deal with those before you hear the broken glass.
Yeah. Another good thing is to be armed and ready to fight at all times. Everyone, including women and children, should practice using weapons and feel comfortable to use them if necessary. get all the necessary licenses, and regular target practice is very good for both shooting exercises on the farm, but also it doubles up as a deterrent.
Yes, if they know that you're practicing and you're armed, like the Swiss principle, if you want peace, prepare for war.
Exactly. So yeah, also just test security systems, alarms, telephones, etc. And also, as owners of the land, you have a right as to who may or may not enter your property. So explain this to your farm workers, and they should respect this. And you have every right to grant or not grant permission of entry. And at the end of the day, I think it's important to maintain good relations with your workers, because you are a team. And organize a farm watch system for them as well, because it's their safety and job security at risk too. So encourage them to be alert and on the lookout, and even remunerate any useful information that they bring forward. Another good idea is to keep copies of all workers' ID documentation along with photographs and fingerprints. And also to be careful with keys. Ensure that they are never left lying around or in the ignition of a car, as this can prevent duplicating if you're careful with your keys. And also be aware of strange foods being left around, maybe to poison dogs. It could be helpful to train your dogs not to accept food from anyone other than family members. And yeah, don't follow a predictable routine. Do things at different times each day and each week. Don't always leave the house at the same time or go to town on a specific day.
Yes, a rut can become a grave.
Exactly. People will start to notice this and plan accordingly. And then, in the case of an attack, remember to stay calm, don't panic, think clearly and critically, as this is your first line of defense and will help you to stay in control. And remember that soft spots, as we heard in some of the examples earlier, ears, nose, eyes, genitals, gouging or tearing of these takes minimal effort, but is extremely effective. And it's never too late to be strong and to start fighting back. As it says in the Bible, be strong and very courageous. So think about what you should do or how you would attack in such a situation, and be ready. Nehemiah 14:13 says, as you mentioned earlier, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight back. Fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes, because South Africa is our home. It's all of our homes. Both black and white people have been born here. In our passports and our ID books, there is no black and white. We are only green. We are South Africans. And friendships have been made, bonds have been formed, and at the end of the day, we are all brothers aspiring to a common desire of security and peace and freedom. So let's start taking a stand for truth. Let's take a stand against corruption, against crime, racism, and rabble-rousing, irresponsible politicians. For evil to flourish, all good people have to do is nothing. So let's not do nothing in this fight for what's right, but let's actively strive for a better tomorrow together.
Excellent. So for people who want to read up more of this, this particular research project on fearless farmers fighting back, you can visit the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website. It's hmsschoolofchristianjournalism.org. HMS standing for Henry Morton Stanley. So you can find Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism on Facebook or on the web. It's hmsschoolofchristianjournalism.org. Look for the 9 steps of genocide as the first part of this, and then this article on fearless farmers. And another article that I've written was Farms and Freedoms Under Fire. If you're interested in good security manuals and insights, there's the Security and Survival Handbook that's been published this year that can be very helpful, available from Christian Liberty Books. So thank you very much, Emma. And awesome. Till next time, I think next week we're going to be having chances for you to debrief our teams that have been up in North Africa and finding out what Muslim evangelism behind the lines, the largest shipment of Bibles ever smuggled into an officially Islamic country. So that'll be up next week.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. God bless. Good night.